I'd like to welcome now Marcela Diaz. She is founding director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, which is a statewide immigrants' rights organization. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me, Marie Charlotte. It's always nice and a pleasure.
So there's so many things going on, including a day of action that you guys are organizing that's happening tomorrow all day, and there is a rally at 12:30 in the afternoon on the east side of the Roundhouse. But on a national level, on a state level, immigrants are in the news and immigrants' rights are in the news. Illinois just signed a driver's license bill.
That's right. On Sunday, there was this amazing signing ceremony with, you know, about 1,000 people in Chicago. And it was the governor signed a law that was passed with broad bipartisan support to ensure that immigrants who don't have social security numbers, immigrants who are undocumented, have an opportunity to drive legally in their state. We're very excited. They're not the only state that is going out and trying to actually bring more people into the fold and give them driver's licenses. California, Connecticut, I know Massachusetts is about to take on a bill that would do the same thing. And of course, we're very proud that New Mexico has held the line on that. We really had, because we've sort of said no to the politics of fear, we've really wanted to deal with this issue sensibly. I think we have allowed other states to have honest conversations about how licensing immigrants or not licensing immigrants actually impacts public safety. And I think that's why we're starting to see this trend.
It's nice to see New Mexico kind of provide leadership in that way. What are some of the parts of the public safety conversation that maybe people haven't been focusing on?
Well, you know, here in New Mexico, we have a really big problem with DWI. We see that there are a lot of legislators, as well as the governor, really focusing on getting a handle on this problem in our state. And so having immigrants licensed, insured, registered, going through, if they're under 25, going through the regular DWI prevention courses, if they're under 18, going through a graduated driver's license system where they have to show that they don't have any convictions or arrests in relation to drug use or alcohol use. These are things that are in place to help tackle this DWI problem. And it doesn't make any sense to exempt thousands of immigrants in the state of New Mexico from those DWI prevention efforts as well as those mechanisms of compliance. And so the example I always give, Mary Charlotte, is the interlock system, right? Having an interlock on your car isn't in lieu of jail time. It's in lieu of losing your driving privileges and your license. And so
remind people what an interlock is.
It's for people who have been convicted of DWIs, or in some cases, if it's their first time offense, they have to do a year of interlock, and so they, before they can start their car, they have to actually blow into something that allows them to start their vehicle. And so that, again, is
so to
that
prove they don't have alcohol in their
right.
breath.
So they do that in lieu of actually having to lose their driving privileges. And so if you don't have driving privileges in the first place and you don't have a driver's license to lose, then how do we ensure that everyone is involved in that that compliance process? So that's one example. We've seen, contrary to what we hear in some of our media outlets, we actually have seen a decrease in the state tabulated uninsured motorist rate. Now, undocumented immigrants without social security numbers only make up about 5% of licensed drivers. And so we're not going to make a big dent, nor have we ever claimed that we would make a big dent in any rate, uninsured motorist rate. We can't. There aren't enough of us.
Right.
But the fact remains that, 85, 90,000 immigrants who previously would not be able to get insurance now can. And that's kind of a big deal. Do you want to get into an accident with someone who doesn't have insurance? Now, recently, California's MVD published a extensive study that shows that unlicensed drivers are more unlicensed, uninsured drivers are more prone to be in accidents that involve that involve fatalities. And so it's one of the reasons, yes, it's one of the reasons why California recently started going the other way. They haven't licensed everyone, but they have licensed about 500,000 undocumented immigrant youth, in part because they said, you know, we really need to, we've seen law enforcement in California say very clearly what we're doing now isn't working. And so we need to bring as many people into the fold. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they actually pass legislation in the near future that would extend that to people beyond the undocumented immigrant youth that are there.
So basically, if you issue driver's licenses to people, what you're saying is they're in the system.
That's right.
They're in the system of automobile insurance. They're in the system of arrest for DWI, of interlocks, and they're just in the, basically, if they do commit a crime, you can find them.
Well, of course, the vast majority of us don't commit crimes.
Right.
That's why we're bringing, you know, immigrant families, mixed immigrant families to Santa Fe to meet with their legislators tomorrow, to give them an opportunity to meet the people we're talking about. But it is true that, you know, MVD's database is the largest, most reliable and updated database available to local, state, and federal law enforcement. And so it is important for public safety reasons to ensure that people are in that system. It's how law enforcement track warrants, child support delinquents. It's how you track your record. It's how, and so because Congress has failed to act on immigration reform up until now, we do have millions of undocumented immigrants. Some of them are in databases because, you know, 40% of them have come in overstayed visas, and so at least they're in DHS's databases or the Department of Homeland Security's. But, you know, the vast majority of us aren't in any database, and so this is a very sound, reasonable way at the state level to make sure that, you know, we everyone is in that system. And so, you know, for us, it's great because when we show a driver's license to a law enforcement official, whether it be because we've been stopped for transit infraction, or when, you know, we're victims or witnesses and they come to a scene of a crime or a domestic disturbance, they always ask for a driver's license or a form of ID. We can give it, and it's a standardized form of identification, which means that law enforcement official knows exactly what it took to get it. So they don't have to handle foreign documents in foreign languages, right? It's one standardized form of ID. I give it to the law enforcement official and he can check my record, he can see that there are no warrants, and then I feel confident that he's not going to think that I'm a criminal, right? Because there I have it. It's giving them the opportunity to sort of weed out the people like most of us who are just going about our daily business, following the rules, and then those that might actually, you know, have warrants against them.
How did Somos Un Pueblo Unido start on this whole issue in the first place? I mean, you and your colleagues kind of identified driver's licenses as a very important thing to try to legalize and succeeded in doing so. What was the impetus for that?
Well, we were having a lot of problems in our communities because we couldn't buy insurance. We were afraid when we would get stopped driving. We were driving. That's the reality. And we'll continue to drive. It's just that it's just so much easier when we can go get our license. We have a standardized form of identification here within the state. We can get our insurance, register our vehicles. You know, if we get ticketed, we get to deal with it just like anyone else. And so, you know, there are benefits for us in that sense. But it's also a benefit to the state. So we put together a coalition back, in the 1999, 2000, 2001, a very broad coalition of, you know, law enforcement, insurance companies, victims' rights agencies, because, of course, you need a form of identification in dealing with that. And also, you know, because victims and survivors of domestic violence, they certainly, it's a tool that they can use to become more independent in their family situations. And so, you know, it was a very broad, and then, of course, churches and civil rights groups. It's something that, you know, was good for our state. And so in 2003, that law was passed. And so far, you know, about 80, 85, 90,000 folks have been able to go through that process and follow the rules and purchase insurance, register their vehicles.
And it has a real human effect. I mean, there are so many people whose lives have been changed for the better, and probably our economy has been, which is in so many ways helped by immigrant labor, whether people like to admit it or not. I mean, people are able to drive to work, but, I mean, you were telling me a story earlier about a young man. Well, tell us about the story that you heard at the Catholic Conference of Bishops.
Yeah, at the beginning of this session, I think the day after it started, we were invited along with many legislators and the governor to a breakfast by the Catholic bishops. They do this every year. And of course, these are, you know, the bishops have been very clear that they support the continuance of issuing licenses to undocumented immigrants if they're qualified drivers and they can prove that they are who they are and they can prove that they live in our state. And so the Archbishop Sheehan read a letter at the beginning of the breakfast that was very moving, and it was about a young man named Cesar Estrada who was brought to this country by his parents at a very young age, and who, just a very eloquent letter from this man thanking the Archbishop for supporting this issue. And he has lived in New Mexico since he was 3 years old, sort of a all-American story. You know, he's involved in sports, he's a good student, but he also had cancer. And he had cancer since he was very, very young. And he talked about how because his parents were able to have a driver's license, they had no fear in driving him to the Mayo Clinic, to St. Jude's Hospital, to his cancer treatments. He had several surgeries, and they had a form of identification through that whole process and a way to go about transporting him. And he said this, you know, might be a white piece of plastic for others, but for his family, it was a tool that really helped him in his treatment efforts. And unfortunately, he ended up dying recently, and the Archbishop gave him his last rites and communion before that. And the Archbishop was very moving because he basically asked legislators to think about this. And he said, don't forget in all of the politics of this that there's a human story here. And that's just one example, a very obviously moving and poignant example of how this little document can actually help a family. But it's just one example of many. And so we really do want people not to forget the human story. We've talked about this, Mary Charlotte. There is a very big political game going on here around immigration, immigrants' rights, certainly on this driver's license issue. And we really are the pawns in it. And we're just trying to survive the day. We're the lowest hanging fruit. We're the easiest to pick on. And we're trying to survive. And so we hope that our legislators, as they move through this session, really remember that human element. Let's not make policy based on this fear tactics and the fear mongering and the political games of everyone. Let's make fair, compassionate, sensible policy that makes sense for the state of New Mexico.
We're talking to Marcela Diaz of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Now, for reasons that I've never fully been able to understand, our governor, Susana Martinez, has been trying to get the driver's license bill repealed that was passed about a decade ago. Even as all these other states are starting to come on board to see what a great thing New Mexico has done and being inspired by us, mm-hmm. and the conversation that we've had here, but she doesn't like it. Do you understand why?
It was clearly a campaign issue when the governor became when the governor was getting elected, and so it's a wedge issue. It's a gem of a wedge issue. You know, illegal immigration is never going to poll well. and yet, we still see the majority of the polls at the national level and even here at the local level show that people just want sensible, workable solutions on this issue. And so I call it the great distractor. We're a very poor state. We have some of the lowest job growth in the country. And, you know, it's a way to not be talking about those issues and to talk about these other issues that rile people up. And again, it's unfortunate because we're talking about, you know, these kinds of policies impacting families a whole community. There are about 200,000 immigrants in the state of New Mexico. About a third are undocumented or in the process of legalizing their status. What most people don't understand is that it can take between 2 and 21 years to get a green card.
21 years?
When you're in line. And so, you know, and in the process, you don't have access to a Social Security number, and you're deportable. And so most of our families, two-thirds of our families, live in what we call mixed status families. So most of our families, we have U.S. citizen children. We've been here between 5 and 20 years. And many of us are in process or waiting for others to adjust immigration status so that we can apply. But in the interim, we're living here, we're working here, we're going to school here, taking our kids to school, to the football games. I mean, we're integrated into this community. And so it really is foolish to want to sort of ignore that reality and say, we don't care as a state that you're here, that you're going to continue to be here. You aren't going to be able to have a license, and you're not going to be able to drive legally. And it would cost a family a lot of money. We saw that happening in California. They have had legislation recently to address this, but, you know, what happens when you get ticketed and you don't have a license? It's an additional, if it doesn't lead to deportation, you are most likely going to have to pay additional fines for not having insurance, for not having registration, for not having a license. That is money out of the pocket of an immigrant family, most likely with U.S. citizen children. If your car is impounded, which was what was happening in so many other states and continues to happen, you know, in order to get your vehicle out, you are going to have to pay hundreds of dollars, and that's because you didn't have driver's license insurance. And so what we implore of these legislators and the governor is to really think through the public safety consequences of this. And so far, so good. In the last couple of years, our legislators have broadly stood up for driver's license reform over repeal, really trying to give additional tools to this administration to fight fraud, although we haven't sort of seen proof that fraud is so vast in our state. We are still interested in making sure that it doesn't happen. What we're interested in as a coalition and as an organization is that, you know, punish the bad guys, you know, give the governor as many tools as she needs to fight fraud at the state level. She has a lot of these tools, which is why we catch them occasionally. We want to safeguard the families who live here, who work here, and who are a part of our communities.
We're talking to Marcela Diaz. Now, let's talk for a moment about fraud. I mean, fraud is everywhere. My friend just had his entire contents of his bank account stolen by somebody who stole his identity. There is fraud in every community and in every part of our lives, unfortunately. And I was thinking about it. It's like, wow, somebody just stole his money 150 years ago. He would have been held up by bandits at gunpoint. Now it's this kind of weird identity theft. Okay, what kind of fraud are we seeing in terms of driver's licenses in the state of New Mexico? And are there at this point any, I mean, I like the word you use, sensible solutions to deal with that fraud that aren't already in place?
Well, you know, it is the responsibility of our state to ensure that we have a secure driver's license system. It's something that we support. Smart enforcement always makes sense. And so it is, you know, there are things in place. It's really hard to get a driver's license right now if you're an undocumented immigrant. You have to prove at the very least that you've lived here for a few months. And so you have, you know, all of these residency documents to prove that. You really have to have one of three or a combination of three verifiable documents, you know, a passport from your country of origin, that the veracity of which can be verified, as well as your matricula consular. Most people don't know from Mexico, and only from these two consulates, the El Paso consulate and the Albuquerque consulate, and most people don't know that our state actually has access to information through their databases to ensure that it's valid, that it hasn't been, that it's not a forged document. So those are very secure documents that our state uses. And so, you know, we do need to make sure that we are catching the fraud and punishing those who are committing it. from out of state, and certainly the people who are opportunists and who take advantage of it. Now, this administration likes to say that there's human trafficking, which, you know, gets people all riled up. And this isn't human trafficking. There's, you know, a clear definition of what human trafficking is, and it involves some kind of forced either labor or forced sexual activities. And, I mean, so it's a whole other thing. But there are people who are trying to get licenses and from our state using their real documents and then having forged residency documents. So we've seen lots of reform legislation address that. And so we've seen it in the last couple of years. But unfortunately, because this issue really isn't about driver's licenses, it's all of, you know, this political gamemanship, we haven't seen any support from this governor for those additional penalties for fraud, as well as requiring longer periods of time, more frequent renewals. And we have seen really good polling information that shows that New Mexicans really support reforming driver's licenses over actually repealing it. And that's because I think New Mexicans aren't stupid. They say, you know, let's cut down on the fraud, let's give tools to do that, but we also need to make sure that people have insurance.
Well, one of the things that's interesting about the fraud is, I mean, somebody comes from out of state with their real documents and then forges their residency documents, but that person who has committed fraud is now in the New Mexico database, is in the New Mexico system.
That's right. And we have also seen, I mean, we have, you know, we have a website, somosunpueblounido.org/DL News, and we have a lot of fact sheets on there, and one of them is on fraud and different ways to address that. The state has done a really good job in the last 5-6 years on addressing those issues and making sure that we have a very secure driver's license with additional security features. And so most people don't know that. But we also see that in all of these states that don't give licenses or don't require undocumented immigrants to get licenses, they have tremendous problems with fraud and identity theft. And so we would contend that fraud would actually proliferate and the nature of the fraud would become even more acute and difficult to wrap our hands around if we stopped giving licenses to immigrants legally. And that's just common sense. You make something illegal and you create a black market for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we need to be really smart about the way we enforce fraud. And we have, as an organization and as a coalition, supported measures both administratively in all of these last 10 years as well as at the legislative level to address these issues. And I think that our state has a good handle on it. But, of course, there are always things that we can continue to do to ensure that people are not committing residency fraud.
I think it's interesting that New Mexicans have really come around on this issue to supporting. I mean, if they were given the choice between repealing the driver's license laws or reforming, mm-hmm. I don't think you pulled the option of just keeping it the way it is, but they really are not in favor of repeal at all.
Well, you know, there was an interesting in November, an interesting Latino Decisions poll. Now, this is the Latino Decisions is a pretty amazing organization at the national level, really trying to take a pulse of where Latino likely voters are. And they polled folks on immigration. I think it was well over 60% of Latinos in New Mexico know someone, either in their family, neighbors, friends, who are undocumented. I think most people don't know that. That's a reality for Latino communities here, is that we are a mixed community. Mm. And that when given the choice between repeal or reform that would continue to license immigrants but with stricter identity and residency requirements and additional penalties for fraud, 70% of Latino voters supported reform over repeal. Only 21% said that they supported repeal outright. They didn't care whether there were additional penalties or not, and then 9% was undecided. And I think it's a real shift, and I think that's in part because we've had so many allies, and it's not just immigrant families through Somos Un Pueblo Unido. We work with about 50 organizations around the state, a lot of not-so-usual suspects, right, like the League of Women Voters, the Hispanic Bar Association. Of course, everyone knows that the Catholic Church, as well as many other denominations, support this. But, you know, we also see that the domestic violence organizations support this because they know that this is a tool for survivors. And folks from the DWI community also support this. So the anti-DWI community. So these, you know, I think we're doing a good job of getting the information out there. And also, I think legislators in the past have done a very good job of being very open and saying, we are, you know, we're more than interested in helping you fight fraud and in dealing with all of these concerns that the governor has, or at least says she has publicly. But every time they actually work to address it in a sensible, non-discriminatory way, they're sort of shut down by the governor and by Republicans, quite frankly. And there are, and it's, you know, and there are some Democrats who don't support it as well. So, but up until now, I think that the legislature has rejected outright repeal and has said, we're open to compromise. The rest of us have been open to compromise, and we shall see if the governor is truly open to compromise. From what I understand, there has been no effort on her part to actually, you know, work with legislators who are pro-driver's license. Compromise doesn't mean compromising with, you know, a sole Republican. It means actually getting together with different stakeholders of this and saying, how can we work this out? And we haven't seen that happen up until now.
We're talking to Marcela Diaz, founding director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, our statewide immigrants' rights organization, and we're talking about immigration reform, immigrant communities in New Mexico, driver's licenses. I mean, year after year, talking about driver's licenses. First, you succeed in getting driver's licenses. It turns out to be a successful program with a real successful track record. Is that right?
That's right. I remember in committee hearings, people who did not support driver's licenses, legislators would say, well, you know, these people are here illegally. Why do you think that given the opportunity, they're actually going to follow the rules, get their licenses, jump through all the hoops that we have to jump through in order to do that, register their vehicles, buy insurance? You know, people who are illegally in the country are never going to do that. And I think what we've shown over the years is we've proven them wrong. We knew that people who are here illegally aren't here illegally because they want to be. They're here to help provide for their families and to really, follow that American dream. It really is about being able to provide for their families, have time to be with their children, all of those things. And we saw very clearly that when given an opportunity, people are willing to follow the rules. And so those are the folks that we want to safeguard, and we've seen that happen. And yes, it's very depressing that we have to talk about this issue. We would prefer to talk about issues that are also important to the immigrant community, how to stimulate job growth, how to provide for our families. Most people...
Yeah, job growth. Excuse me. Let's talk about that.
Alleviating poverty. What a lot of people don't know is that here in New Mexico, an immigrant family, the median income of an immigrant family is $20,000 less than the median income of a non-immigrant family. So we are also dealing with all of these issues. And we are a part of, and should be, a part of the solution.
Right.
When 1 in 10 New Mexicans is immigrant or foreign born, and most of us have U.S. citizen children, you know, we should be a part of the problem solving. And I think that that's one of the, and we should be a part of the solution. And that's really one of the reasons why we've seen a movement at the national level on immigration reform. I mean, certainly the results of the election show that people want common sense solutions, workable solutions that are fair and sensible, not the fear-mongering, the anti-immigrant fear tactics that we have seen, not only in races around the country, but here at home. And I have to say, this last election really showed, not just nationally, but here in New Mexico, that people are tired of that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah.
What they want is action that's smart and fair.
You know, you said a moment ago, we should be not considered the problem, but really part of the solution. I mean, it's more than that. I mean, immigrants, it's such a cliche, but immigrants built this country. And when you look at a city like Santa Fe, where you have such an aging population, where's the youth and energy? It's a lot of it is in the immigrant population, kids in school. This is the next generation of Santa Feans who are going to be the entrepreneurs, the leaders, the city councilors, the workers of this city, much less the whole state.
Well, I'm glad you talk about Santa Fe. We make up between 12 and 14% of the county here in Santa Fe. And clearly, you know, our families are an integral part of the economy here. especially in tourism, in home health care, the service sector. We are a vital part of this economy. And so it makes sense, instead of alienating this vital part of the economy, to integrate it more and to maximize the contributions of immigrants. That being said, we have, you know, we are needed here in Santa Fe County. And so that's why we've been really happy to see over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of our city councilors, a lot of our county commissioners, staff both at the city and the county, really take a much more sensible, integrative approach to immigrants. And we're seeing it pay off. I mean, here we've been able to, although Santa Fe certainly has all the problems that the rest of the country has and the rest of the state during recession and during these economic tough times, we're also seeing Santa Fe County weather the storm a little bit better than the rest. We have a lower unemployment rate than the average unemployment rate in New Mexico and across the country. And that's, you know, and that's, we're actually stimulating growth here as a community. And so that's very exciting.
There's also another thing. I mean, you said the politics of fear-mongering and hatred and things like that really do not make for a happy society. And we finally, I think, as a nation, gotten wise to that. And I think we saw that in the last election to some extent. And I think where, for example, the driver's licenses and other bills that support immigrants are concerned, my guess is that when you have legislation and community practices that do support immigrants, you're going to have fewer hate crimes and less brutal policing and things like that against that community.
Yes, absolutely. We need to have policies that don't single people out based on their national origin, race, ethnicity. That's very un-American, and it's one of the reasons why we work with a broad set of allies on ensuring that we, you know, that our local law enforcement are not engaging in racial profiling and bias-based policing. And smartly, a lot of our law enforcement officials understand that across the state, that if you alienate the immigrant community, the mixed status immigrant community, both documented and undocumented, that you're going to have a harder time actually catching the bad guys. You're going to have a harder time implementing strong and sound public safety policies. This is something that law enforcement officials here in New Mexico understand, as well as around the country. You don't alienate this community. Integrate them, make them a part of your public safety efforts, and you create a community that's safer for everyone.
We're talking to Marcela Diaz of Somos Un Pueblo Unido. Let's talk for a moment about immigration reform on the national level. I mean, you were talking about how in New Mexico and on the national level, in some ways, the immigration issue, such as it is a pawn in a larger game. What are you seeing in terms of national immigration reform? What would be right, and what is actually happening?
Well, nothing's happening yet, right? We did have, we saw a really amazing announcement yesterday by the so-called gang of six or of eight. And they basically laid down their, what they call, bipartisan framework for comprehensive immigration reform. The good thing is that it basically does what we need it to do, and that would be to create a path to citizenship for the 11, 12 million undocumented immigrant families that that are in this country. But the devil's always in the details, right? It also says that, you know, we have to enforce our borders, and the reality is that we've been spending billions of dollars, both in the northern but mostly in the southern border. I saw the folks down south, the ACLU coalition, or it's the ACLU border rights regional ACLU office, saying that based on their estimates, there are 10 Border Patrol agents per mile on the southern border. We're throwing a lot of money at that area, and we're probably not doing it in an efficient way. And so if we're going to really create something that's going to work at the national level, it makes sense to ensure the an immediate path to citizenship for these folks, and not make them wait for future triggers in border enforcement or in e-verify systems, where we would require all businesses across the country to engage in this sort of national ID system where, you know, you have to, how do you actually make that work? All workers in the country would have to have some kind of card verifying that they can legally work. And that doesn't just affect immigrants, that affects all U.S. citizens. So we need to make sure that we're going into this process in a sensible way and not create policy based on fear and not create policy based on discrimination. We need to create, and not and on illogical arguments of the other side. That's what we've seen a lot of, unfortunately, is, you know, how can we create a law that addresses every single issue and an argument of our opponents, even if some of those arguments are just illogical?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you have a group of crazy lawmakers say all immigrants have green antennas that put venom all over the schools, and then you have to write a bill that addresses
that.
I mean, in real life, what are some examples of illogical arguments that are dealt with in legislation?
Well, the immigration reform piece is the perfect example. You know, we want folks to be on a path to citizenship, path to legalization. And so, you know, this gang of eight, they're saying, well, we can't do that until sort of some trigger mechanisms are in effect. And so we need to make sure that no one is overstaying their visa. Well, if we provided a path to legalization, then maybe we wouldn't have as many people overstaying their visas. Making sure that there's zero overstaying of visas before we give people a path to legalization just seems like a ridiculous circle that we're never going to get ourselves out of, right? And so that's a good example of illogical policymaking. But there it is. Today, later on, the president is going to also announce his broad framework for immigration reform. And so the fact that this is being done in a bipartisan manner is very encouraging to Somos. It's very encouraging to our families. And so we'll see where it goes. Everyone believes that it'll be a protracted and contentious debate and fight in Congress, because again, a lot of this is political and not based on the realities and needs of our families. And so we'll see where it goes. But we're encouraged that that we're seeing movement within the Republican Party. I think they've seen the writing on the wall, and they've seen how important it is if they want to remain viable, that they actually need to be talking to more people, more communities, and particularly the Latino community.
Well, I'm sort of watching what looks like the Republican Party self-destructing. I mean, with this kind of fanatical focus on abortion as opposed to the environment, communities, the economy, and things that are actually the most real to our daily lives. They don't seem to be able to address that. On a state level, we're the laughingstock of the nation with that infants as evidence kind of bill mm-hmm. that probably everybody who's listening to this has heard about. And on the national level, it seems like this is my editorial comment, but it seems like they're really out of touch. I mean, there's all this kind of maybe pandering to the changing demographics of the United States, in which there are more Latinos than ever and fewer older white guys every year than ever. And yet what we're actually seeing in terms of legislation and policy doesn't really match up with what they would like, which is to get people to vote for them.
That's right. I mean, we have seen, I mean, our governor is a perfect example. She's a sort of a rising star among the GOP at the national level, and she talks about how Republicans need to be more welcoming and open and towards immigrants and Latinos, and how they should be changing tone and rhetoric. What's frustrating, and a lot of Republicans are saying that, mind you, she's only one of many. What's frustrating, coming from the Latino community, coming from an immigrant family, coming from a group of folks that are really concerned about this issue and its impact on our daily lives, is that we don't want just the tone and the rhetoric to be changed. We want to see a fundamental understanding of the reality of our lives. And so we need to see action. And that's what we haven't seen here locally from unfortunately, from our governor on our issues. And we're not seeing it, you know, broadly across the country now. Let's see where Republicans end up standing on these frameworks of for immigration reform. It is encouraging at the national level, but once again, it's really a terrible thing to be a pawn in these political games.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about us, but not to us, and not with us. And again, when we all have good ideas about how to solve problems in our communities, to support public safety, to support economic growth, to help alleviate poverty, we're a part of the solution, and yet everyone talks at us and about us. And what we really want to see is a fundamental change in the way our communities are being dealt with.
Now, here in New Mexico, which has really a different history than the rest of the country, I mean, we were Mexico, and we have such a large Latino population here, which has lived here for many people for centuries. How are the politics different here, if they are, than, for example, a Midwestern state?
Well, I think that because we have such a large Latino electorate and a lot of Latinos in office at every level, we have seen in the last 10, 15 years, New Mexico take charge on this debate. We have some of the most sensible policies and integrative policies of immigrants. Driver's licenses, this is the perfect example. In-state tuition for undocumented immigrant students who were brought here as children. Ensuring at the very local level, although this is changing a lot with state police and with state probation and parole officers, ensuring that, you know, law enforcement is dealing with crimes and not civil immigration status, right? Integrating immigrants at every level has sort of been where our state has, that's the direction we've been in. We've been ahead of the curve. And now we're seeing others trying to catch up. Our fear is that this driver's license repeal effort and other administrative changes that we've been seeing will take us backwards. And so that doesn't make sense, especially given where the country's at right now trying to move forwards. And so we're hopeful that something will happen at the national level. We're thankful that here at the local level, our legislators and local policymakers are sort of putting their foot down and saying, you know, we need to move forward in a sensible direction, and we need to keep ahead of the curve on these issues, not fall behind. I think that, you know, that's what we're hoping for, and again, it's why we're bringing hundreds of our members and their families to actually engage directly with these legislators.
Tomorrow,
we do our yearly Immigrant Day of Action. We've been doing it for 10 years. We did it back in 2003.
Yep.
And you know, later this afternoon, there will be the first hearing on all of these repeal bills in the House Labor Committee, and our families will be there. And these hearings are moving, because not only do we see, you know, the law enforcement officials stand up, and the mayor, and people who are imploring legislators to pass good public safety policies, we have our families standing up. And I will never forget one young woman, I think she's probably been on your show in the past, Maite Garcia, who stood up in the last hearing, one of the last hearings last year, and I think it was before the House Judiciary Committee. And she is, you know, in her late 20s. She's lived here since she was six. She has a daughter, beautiful little daughter. And she said, you know, 10 years ago, I was in this very room. And I was here to tell you why I, at 16, needed a driver's license. I was a high school student. They were segregating. They had a segregated parking lot at my school, one for undocumented immigrant kids and one for everyone else.
You're kidding.
That was here, Capitol High, yeah. And she said, so instead of trying to get them, I'm working with Somos to pass, to change this law, because it's not fair. And these are the kinds of, and they did it because obviously they, for liability issues, they wanted people who were licensed and insured in their school parking lot, and everybody else had to park outside, right? But then all of a sudden, everybody knew who was undocumented and not documented based on this administrative change at that school. And so she was just so moving, because she said, I was here 10 years ago, and I never thought I would be here 10 years later. But I'm here asking for the same thing I was asking for 10 years ago. But let me tell you what I've done in the last 10 years. She said, I went to school. I got my degree. I'm getting my degree. I'm going to be a teacher. I had a child, and I take her to the doctor. I am, you know, I have a job. I've been an activist. I am the American dream. And this is what I use my license for, you know. And now she has a 2-year-old, 3-year-old daughter, and she takes her to school or preschool. She takes her to the doctor. She says, I am not a criminal. I'm not from New York trying to get a license here. I am not a terrorist. I am a part of this community. And it's sad. It was really moving because she says, it's sad that I have to be here 10 years later doing exactly what I was doing 10 years ago.
It really does seem to be part of our history in this country that whatever battles we seem to win, we have to keep on refighting them. I mean, the extent to which we're refighting the Civil War and Jim Crow is one of the great pains and really blemishes on our history as a country. But here we are doing it again. Do you think that there is a positive trend in terms of just, I mean, basic compassion, understanding, acceptance, and that sense of integration that you were talking about? Do you see that? Do you feel that when you go around New Mexico?
We don't have the luxury of not being hopeful. And I have to say that in the last 2 years, I mean, I've been at Somos for 15 years. We've been doing a lot of policy work, both at the local level and the state level. It is amazing once you actually get everyone in a room and help these local policymakers meet the families that they are impacting our lives.
And representing.
And representing. Some of them choose not to. In fact, we've heard folks say, I don't represent you just because you're illegally in the country. And we're like, let's re-explain democracy to you. But, you know, I have seen movement. I have seen politicians move on this issue, not just because of politics, but because their hearts and their minds are changed. It doesn't happen every day. But when I see that, I am heartened. And it is what helps me continue to do this work day in and day out. I also see incredible bravery and hard work of immigrant families. Somos un Pueblo Unido is a community-based organization. We have over 2,000 members. We have membership teams in 11 counties, and they are meeting, you know, once every 2 weeks, every month, strategizing, figuring out how they can solve these problems in their communities, and they're meeting to determine what allies they need to reach out to be able to solve these problems in our communities. And so it's very exciting. I'm very heartened by that kind of movement. I'm also heartened at the national level to see that there are people who are trying to move immigration reform forward, something that's fair, something that's viable for our families. And so there are a lot of different reasons why that's the reality, and I take them all. Let's move forward, not backwards. And a lot of it is political, of course, and we're just trying to dodge bullets, is what I say. We're just trying to survive the day. But we have to be hopeful that people can move forward. I've worked with city councilors who were not necessarily anti-immigrant, but, you know, they had open minds. They weren't particularly pro-immigrant, but they had open minds. And over the course of years, I've had lots of politicians and policymakers say, thank you for your hard work because it's helped us open our minds to this community. And so that's why we can be much more supportive of you now. And so that's exciting.
Marcela Diaz is founding director of Somos Un Pueblo Unido, a statewide immigrants' rights organization, which is on the web at somosunpueblounido.org. And I will link to that on my website, santaferadiocafe.org. And also, you can check out the radio program Nuestra America, which is here on KSFR from 6:30 to 7 every Wednesday evening. And tomorrow is the Day of Action, which, as you said, there will be families from all over the state who are coming to speak to their legislators. And at 12:30, there is a rally on the east side of the Roundhouse, right on that corner of Paseo de Peralta and Old Santa Fe Trail. And everybody is welcome to show up.
We would love for people to show up. It's Dignity for Immigrants Rally, and I think that it's important for everyone to participate because this is about the soul of New Mexico. Do we want to move forward on this issue, or do we want to move backward? Do we want to be the state that discriminates and that falls prey to these fear tactics? Or do we want to take the high road and say that as a border state, we're ahead of the curve, we want to integrate our families, they're a part of our communities, and so I hope that your listeners will join us.
Marcela, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.